This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Property Show on The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. City living can get a bad rap, often associated with crowds, stress, pollution, and never-ending bustle. How then do we make our cities more enjoyable places to live? Well, that's the aim of placemaking. And here to discuss this concept with me today are Hans Karsenberg, the founding partner of European urban planning consultancy Stipo, and Li Jiaping, program director for partnerships at Think City. Welcome to the show. Let's start with the basic understanding of placemaking. How would you define this in layman terms?
I think placemaking is putting the heart back into our cities, the human scale. We kind of forgot about that in the past decades. We built this very rational, car-driven city. It's a city where people feel at home in the public space, where you go to a public space and stay much longer than you were intending to, where you meet other people, where your kids can play outside.
Okay, so it's essentially the goal of placemaking is to create a home atmosphere?
Yeah,
Would that be right?
We always say we want to get from livable cities to lovable cities.
Livable to lovable.
Yeah, and it's also where, you know, it's a place where you feel belonging. It's a place where you walk down the street and you know people. So the one of the leading placemaking gurus is Jane Jacobs. And it's all about, you know, that neighborhood where everybody knows your name and, you know, it's safe enough for the children to just play on the sidewalks. There's a sidewalk bench that you can sit on and just, if you feel like just people watching, just sit down and watch. So the whole creating that atmosphere is what we call placemaking. It's one of the aspects of placemaking.
I was curious, why this special terminology for something that, I mean, to a layperson, should be something so innate in the way we design our cities and living spaces?
I guess what we see, there's a lot of rational planning, a lot of quite short-term profit planning. There's a lot of standardization in the construction process. Every building more or less looks more and more the same, no matter where you are in the world. And this is a counter movement to that. It's about people feeling at home, feeling like it's their own place, feeling that they're involved in helping to co-create the public space and the places where they meet other people, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. So how do you judge whether placemaking is successful? I guess what's your benchmark for judging a successful initiative?
So we have a couple of benchmarks. First is you always do a baseline study. What was there? What are the challenges and what are you trying to solve? So we've been doing placemaking for the last 10 years. We're coming to our 10th anniversary at Think City. And one of the things one of the first projects that we did was this park called Armenian Park. And it's in Georgetown in the Heritage Core. And we realized that it was a park that had been taken over by Pasar Karat, which is, you know, so the secondhand markets that lay their goods on the floor on a mat, and then you just buy and it's secondhand goods or goods fallen off from the back of a truck. And what had happened was that we're not anti-market or anti-Pasar Karat. It's that the market excluded the community that was around that park because it started attracting drug sellers. It started attracting other nefarious activities. And so people, families with children and businesses were starting to avoid the park. So when we talk about placemaking, it's always about inclusiveness. It's about a place for everybody, regardless of economic power. And, you know, you should be able to enjoy your public spaces, right?
So is placemaking essentially transforming something that maybe an undesirable part of a neighborhood? Is it changing it to become something more attractive to the masses? Is that kind of what it is?
That could be. Or it could be a public space that is not used at all because it's not a friendly space. It's a very rational space. Maybe there are no benches or it's very car dominated. So it's bringing back the people into the public life, into the streets. So, and placemaking can be done in many, many different circumstances, in lower income areas, in wealthier areas. It can be done in parks, in squares. It can be done in streets. It can be about creating a more child-friendly city, a healthier city. So there's many ways to work on placemaking. Yeah.
Would you say that it's primarily an outdoor initiative? It's sort of covering out open spaces. Would it also include indoor spaces?
Well, we like to call it the city at eye level. The city that you see around you when you're walking as a pedestrian. And then, of course, the public space is very important for that. But what is happening on the ground floors of building and what is happening inside and the interaction between the inside and the outside. If there's a blank wall there, then you still won't feel that the public space is friendly or doesn't feel safe because nobody's watching you. If there's a row of small shop houses, then you feel much more at home. So it is about the interaction between the inside and the outside as well.
Mm. And so, you know, we started off in 2009 giving grants to incentivize owners of heritage stock to create a better facade or to, like, you know, repair their heritage buildings. And I think that in itself is an act of placemaking because you encourage owners to take pride in their space. And so when people started seeing one building looking nice, then there was that whole, oh, the neighbor then said, oh, I want this as well. And you have start having a catalytic effect. And before you know it, within 6 months to a year, you've got a whole street all pristine and shiny. So you know the whole issue of broken window syndrome? If people see a place that's derelict, it invites more dereliction or invites more unhealthy habits to propagate. But if something is clean, yeah, so I think other cities have this, you know, as soon as graffiti goes up, within 24 hours, the graffiti is cleaned up. So it sends a signal to say that, you know, we want this to be clean and inviting for everyone, right? So that's also a tool of placemaking.
I see. Who spearheads these placemaking efforts? Is it a grassroots kind of initiative, or is it really something from the local authorities? Or, you know, how does it get started?
It's very different in very different places, different countries. Sometimes it's somebody working for the municipalities starting the process. Really, they can become the placemaker. Sometimes it's somebody from the community working on a civic initiatives, really grassroots initiative that can then grow larger. And if it's done well, it's those both worlds, the kind of the bottom-up and the top-down world working together on create, because you need both worlds sitting at the same table and working on creating better public spaces. You can't only do that bottom-up and you can't only do that top-down usually.
So it's about meeting people halfway. So I think in the olden days, councils or local government used to elicit response and feedback from the public via town hall. So we say that, you know, town hall only celebrates those who have no fear of voicing out their opinions. And if you really want to be inclusive, town halls actually don't invite other opinions. They only invite the opinions of the loudest. And so one of the things we've been advising councils is to say, take it out of the town hall methodology and get onto the streets. Put buntings and banners and A boards on the street explaining what you want to do with that street, or explaining, you know, ask the community who we feel in placemaking is the expert, right, of any space, and ask them what they want to see here. What are some of their problems? And so a lot of what, you know, we do, Hans and I, there's a lot of similarities despite being in different locations, is that it's the people who live in the space or work in the space that knows the best, right? So it's like marketing. You don't market any product without doing your background research, right, on whether that product will sell. So it's the same thing. The person using it is always the expert.
We're going to delve more into that after a quick break. I'm discussing placemaking on The Property Show with Hans Karsenberg of European urban planning consultancy STIPO and Li Jiaping of Think City. Stay with us, BFM 89.9. If you've just joined us, you're listening to The Property Show on The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mukhtar, and with me today are Hans Karsenberg, the founding partner of European urban planning consultancy STIPO, and Li Jiaping, Program Director for Partnerships of Think City. I wanted to talk to you about how you bring communities into placemaking initiatives. Hans, you've led and developed the placemaking movement in Europe through the city at eye level. How was the response from the community at the initial stages?
So when we say the community, it's often heard as residents, but actually it's a very diverse group of stakeholders. You need everybody to sit at the table who's part of the solution. So for instance, if a street is not functioning anymore, you not only need the residents to become active, but also the landlords, the shop owners, the people working for the city council, etc., etc. So community for us means a very diverse group of people, everybody who you need to transform a bad situation to a more lovable street, let's say. Very often we just start by walking in the area, visiting the area, talking to people, finding out who are the more or less the informal leaders here, who are the people who want to do something, who have an initiative but may not be able to find a way to realize that initiative. And then one of the next steps could be to do a kind of a workshop, a place game or an eye level game. Very often used methodology where you bring a group of 40 different people together and have them analyze the street and come up with proposals together in mixed groups so that they start working together and coming up with proposals. On the one hand, for what is it that you would like the street to become 5 years from now in the long term or 10 years from now, but also what can you do today or tomorrow? And then to start working on those quick wins immediately, to start seeing the first results. Start with the petunias, we always say.
Yeah, so we have a guru in the form of Project for Public Space, right? And they have this term called quicker, lighter, cheaper. And it's about you need to pop things up so that people can see the possibilities. If you use the normal planning process, it may take too long. And so the people that you speak to then lose momentum or they lose hope. They say, oh, you know, just wasted my time talking to you. Nothing has happened. You know, you mean it's taken 18 months for us to see anything? So what we do is we utilize a very cheap, quick way of popping up things and then programming either busking or picnics or events where people can get together. And then they can then see a different possibility to a space that wasn't loved or wasn't used, you know, that was derelict.
So you need to have sort of that low-hanging fruit, like to start with that, for them to see the bigger possibilities and kind of work towards sort of that vision.
Yeah, and placemaking is not about design. Very often, if a public space does not work, a city council will have the reflex to ask for a new design. And you spend a lot of money implementing the design and then still nobody's using it. So placemaking is also testing to see what works in an affordable way. And then make it bigger if it does work. So it's a more iterative, more organic approach to planning, which is also more cost efficient.
Yeah. So one of the things that we did when we started the office in Kuala Lumpur in 2015 was that we were hearing a lot of feedback to say that, you know, the old part of Kuala Lumpur, which is where the Heritage Core is and where the Kuala Lumpur got its name at the Masjid Jamek Junction, we were told it's so bad and overrun by migrants that it's not safe anymore. And so we thought, no, I don't think it's the migrants causing this feeling of uneasiness. So let's test it, right? So previously in the old way, what you would do is you would design a nice potted plant or whatever for a square, and then you would spend lots of money just changing the square, thinking that it's the problem of the square. But we had then done a study to say, actually, it's not the problem of the square, it's that you don't have enough people on the streets, right, to make things happen. So we said, is it because they're not coming because they don't feel safe, or is it that they're not coming because there's not enough things to do? So we then put some money towards markets, programming, getting activities on the market. And we invited young entrepreneurs to set up stores. And in one weekend, we had 20,000 people. So that already is proof to tell you that actually, it's not that they're afraid to come down, it's there's nothing to come down for. So then when you have that data, you can then say, now you can plan to say, where are you then putting enough places of interest for these people to come back down to? So one of the things we then realized was there's not enough diversity of shops, right? So there's tons for migrants, which is great for them, but there's nothing for the locals, right? And then also there's not enough local residents in there. So DBKL has just announced that you can now apply for a micro living space. And so that's something that we've been working with DBKL for the last 2 years. And so we do a lot of advocacy work to say, you know, there are buildings that need saving. You can repurpose buildings. So that's also another act of placemaking. So it's not so simple to say it's about just squares or parks or, yeah, things like that.
And to give you an entirely different example, maybe we work with innovation districts. That's high-end economic centers in our cities. And we know from Brookings Institute research, that the innovation districts that have great places between them where people interact, meet, where there's programming going on for people to meet, there the innovation economy is developing much faster than in competing innovation districts, because the innovation nowadays doesn't happen within large organizations anymore. It happens between organizations. So you need people to come together and to exchange ideas and thoughts, and that's happening in the space between those buildings. So totally different circumstance, and there the community would be the high-end investors of those buildings, because they realize, and of course the users, the offices that are there, because they realize that their area will function better when they engage in placemaking.
And so this is coming from, I guess, the developer's perspective and those who are kind of developing a particular area.
In Europe, we see nowadays more and more developers embracing the idea of placemaking, because they realize that it's also good for property value and property development.
I guess that brings me to sort of one of the criticisms of placemaking that I've heard, in the sense that placemaking could make a place more attractive, thus displacing the current residents there. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, we just put together a book on this exactly for this reason. It's called Our City and How to Counter exclusion in public space. We see placemaking happening in lower income areas as well, where people have a fundamental right to have access to great quality public spaces, and probably in those areas it's even more needed. So placemaking done by developers in developing areas often leads to higher prices, and that's where we get that image from. But it shouldn't be that way only, and it doesn't only have to be that way.
Yeah. So for in downtown Kuala Lumpur, where all the Heritage Core is, it's about regeneration, because the locals have moved out. It wasn't that they were forced out. They've just moved out to bigger houses, you know, the shiny suburbs. And that's why in the vacuum, the migrants have moved in. So that's a different model. So we're trying to regenerate so that we can fit more locals back in, not to chase them out, you know. And some of the locals are closing. The local retailers are closing because there's not enough footfall. There's not enough people to buy their goods because they're all going into the malls. So we're hoping to kind of reverse that by bringing more people in, so that we're trying to preserve the intangible heritage that's there at the moment.
And we see in general the places are functioning better if they're not dominated by one single user group, be it a homeless group or be it an only rich user group. So you need a great diversity of people in a place, and then it will function much better. So it's very important to be very inclusive in your placemaking.
I guess it's sort of like a cycle, right? You kind of want to keep the diversity is what keeps people coming back as well. What you've described so far, these are really long-term projects. You start something small, but if it doesn't continue, you know, it kind of just ends there and it could just backtrack again and become a derelict place. So how do you ensure that placemaking efforts are sustainable?
So one of the ways that we're doing it is by introducing this international conference called Placemaker Week ASEAN. So in order to have sustainability, you need to have local champions. You need to build local champions either in the community, business community, residential community, local council, as well as federal and state governments. You need a champion in all the levels, right? And one of the things we're trying to do is to bring in as much best in case studies all around the world and use it as an advocacy piece to tell people you don't need to spend tons of money. You just need to build local champions, invest in leadership, enable them and empower them, and watch it flower.
We're very often building coalitions in the area that we're working in, coalitions of the landlords, of the people having who have a shop there, the residents, all the people who want to do something. But it's a very good question. In Europe right now, we're working towards an agenda to include more real estate developers to embrace placemaking and make it a fundamental part of their development process rather than something only at the end of the development process or at the beginning of the development process. We're working with municipalities to open up their systems because the systems are aimed at standardizing everything rather than making exceptions to the rules, and placemaking is making an exception, to work together with those initiatives because their systems aren't catering for that at all. So those systems need to change. Mm.
So we're bringing someone like Robin Abad from the San Francisco City Council. Do you want to speak about Robin?
Excellent example. Robin has helped to change the city administration of San Francisco around to really opening up all the aspects of the system, going through it very thoroughly. And right now, it's compulsory, if there is a civic initiative for placemaking, it's compulsory for the city to work together with them. So he really achieved a lot, and I think he's a leading example and very inspiring, hopefully, to the cities coming to the conference here.
Thanks so much for joining us today. I've been speaking to Hans Karsenberg, the founding partner of European urban planning consultancy STIPO, and Li Jiaping, Program Director for Partnerships of Think City. The Placemaker Week ASEAN 2019 is taking place here in Malaysia from 4th to 8th November. You can find out more details at thinkcity.com.my. This has been The Property Show on The Morning Run. Coming up next is the 10 a.m. news bulletin, followed by Enterprise. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.